welcome our listeners to this broadcast of Shooting from the Hip, brought to you by Sim Trainer, the Dayton area's first indoor range and firearms training center. We're located at 2031 Dryden Road. That's 2031 Dryden Road, right across from DP&L in Moraine. You can visit us on the web at www.sim-trainer.com. That's sim-trainer.com, or you can give us a call at 937-293-3914. If you'd like to call us here at the show today, you can call in at 457-1290. That's 457-1290, and we'd be glad to get you on the air with any of your firearms-related questions, concerns, issues you'd like to discuss. Last several weeks been pretty lively, and we certainly welcome you to join us today. I'm Jeff Pedro, in with Mark Avery for another action-packed hour of Shooting from the Hip. Purpose of the show, again, as I've told you so many times, is we just want to get the word out there about the good things going on in the world of firearms and talk about some of the controversial issues also. Just this past week, for example, there's a couple of things that I just wanted to bring to the listeners' attention. First of all, the news reports in Florida. A former Florida beauty queen was involved in an incident whereby a career criminal who just got out of prison after serving 13 or 14 years for a variety of crimes, including burglary and related offenses, broke into her home at 3 o'clock in the morning, attempted to assault her, and her boyfriend, who happened to be asleep upstairs, heard the commotion, ended up coming to her aid initially, and was able to pull the attacker off of her long enough for her to go retrieve her firearm, and she fired 4 shots, hitting and killing the suspect, 4 for 4, and the bad guy was DRT, dead right there. A good ending to a potentially bad situation. I might also add, in that situation, the attacker had apparently gained the upper hand on the boyfriend, who was trying to come to his girlfriend's aid, and had it not been for the woman, number one, having the capacity to retrieve a firearm, having the willingness to use it, and ultimately using it in an effective manner, the outcome could have been very bad. But it was a case of one for the good guys, and it's a story that probably won't go much reported because of the circumstances and because of the slant that the media typically has. But another example where there they were, minding their own business in their own home, 3 o'clock in the morning, and an attacker just decided to come and try to perpetrate a pretty serious crime, and he just picked the wrong place at the wrong time on this particular day with a person who was very committed on taking care of her own personal safety. Because another example where the incident happened so spontaneously that law enforcement couldn't have done much for them in that particular situation. Mark, did you happen to see that?
And I think most people who are listeners of this show understand our objective is to make sure that every house is the wrong house for someone to go in and attack. We think every citizen should be able to defend themselves effectively. Whatever means they choose to do that, they should be both willing and able to defend themselves with whatever method that they deem to be most effective for them. And obviously, as firearms guys, we think that using a firearm to do that is a good way to do that, because first, it doesn't require that you get into hand-to-hand contact distance. It creates a tremendous advantage and operates, again, at a distance, so that you don't necessarily have to physically be strong enough to defend yourself in order to defend yourself with a firearm. It's just an excellent tool. In fact, it gives you the best possibility of escaping a violent attack without serious bodily harm. It's still probably a 1 in 5 chance that you may get seriously injured as a result of that if somebody tries to attack you. But the next closest is about 1 in 2.
Right. That's one example. Another article that I happened to come across in the last couple of days had to do with, I believe it was the Illinois Supreme Court coming to a decision that was very, very important and has long-term fallout or long-term implications for all of us, is that even with laws in Illinois being gun restrictive, the Supreme Court there decided that there was an individual arrested from the state of Indiana that was transporting a gun through the state of Illinois. He was arrested for unlawful possession and transportation of a firearm in Illinois because he did not have the Illinois-mandated firearm owner's identification card. This was, I believe, a 2005 case. Well, the Supreme Court came back with a decision overturning that conviction, stating that he, in fact, because he had the right to carry in his home state, passing through the state of Illinois was not a problem. Now, the details on this case are sketchy, but I just want to let our listeners know that in cases where laws are decided, we can't necessarily go with news accounts of the outcome because we don't know the specific fact pattern. The reason I bring it up on the show is that I just wanted to point out that the national movement towards less restrictive laws is even impacting the state of Illinois, which you would think tends to be on the obviously more restrictive end of things. The Supreme Court there recognized that, hey, this person was a law-abiding citizen, other than the fact that they just happened to be traveling through the state of Illinois legally, and they didn't have a firearms owner identification card, and they were transporting a firearm for whatever reason at that particular time, and based on those circumstances, when they were arrested, they were in violation of the law. Well, the Supreme Court said, wait a minute, they were otherwise law-abiding, and therefore the conviction is not going to stand. And I don't know what the long-term implications of that are, but I think what's happening is the mood of the country is having an effect all over the place, and I think more rational minds are prevailing at the present time, and those sorts of things are getting decided in our favor. And the other point I want to make about all this is we've said time and time again, and in our current state's a prime example of this, the legislation is slow evolving, but it is in fact evolving in our favor, and we just have to be patient and persistent, and we have to stay up on things and continue to kind of champion the cause, because good things are happening around the country, and even though they're slow, they are deliberate. I noticed Arizona, I believe, also came up with or made a decision. Mark, and you've been out there in the last week or so. I don't know if you're aware of they passed or it's either introduced or passed legislation indicating that schools are no longer going to be gun-free zones, following Texas's lead a couple weeks ago.
It's not exactly the way Texas did it, but it's a good start. It basically it says that you can carry in the public open spaces. You still can't go into buildings and dormitories, which I think is a serious problem, because that means any students who are adults and are legally able to get a license to carry a concealed handgun would be unprotected from the time that they leave their dorm till they get to wherever they have their firearm stored in. Storing a firearm in a vehicle is simply not as secure as keeping it on your person or keeping it in your quarters. So it's a good thing that at least they have not made the entire facility a gun-free zone, a criminal protection zone, but they still have a long ways to go. And I think that we need to take the lead from what Utah did. The universities in Utah had said, you know, we want to block students from carrying. And the state says, sorry, you don't have the authority to do that, Board of Regents. And it's a state institution, and the state has already passed a law that says they can. And if they're legally licensed and are able to carry a firearm, then you can't prevent them from doing that on campus. I think that's the kind of approach we need to take in Ohio as well. We need to open campuses to carry, to legal carry. Now, that means it makes it slightly more difficult for law enforcement and for the prosecutors to get a conviction, because they can no longer convict based on existence while armed. That's very easy to prove. You were there, you had a gun, you're guilty, end of story. That is unfortunately the way that many of our laws are currently written, and I think that's a problem, because there should never be the situation of existence while armed. You should instead have to have done something that is an illegal act, not simply presence, but actual action.
Well, in the current state of the situation around the country is indicative of what you're just talking about. And basically, now in Ohio, we've had concealed carry for 7 years. And let's face it, you would know this if the counter was true, but there's not been a single significant noteworthy incident whereby a legitimate law-abiding concealed carry permit holder did anything particularly stupid. Now, there have been some things where they've made some mistakes in judgment, and those kinds of things need to be addressed, and that goes with inexperience, and that also goes along with people who just assume that they're going to go to take a class for 12 hours and sit through the class, and all of a sudden they're going to start carrying their gun and everything's going to be fine. One of my colleagues just sent an email about a inadvertent discharge of a Glock pistol in a holster on an individual who was getting into his car, and the gun happened to go off. Well, what they found out was that particular holster was such that the way that he was wearing it, going in and out of the car, sitting down, getting up, a particular part of that holster folded into the trigger guard and actually created a situation where a portion of the holster pulled the trigger when his body pressure pushed downward on the gun. So there's issues that come up, and unfortunately, sometimes we have to learn from the school of hard knocks, but that's a case of where just people not being familiar with their equipment. And in some cases, it just happened. That holster is probably a pretty good holster. Matter of fact, it was manufactured by a very highly reputable company. It's just that that particular holster on that particular day, based on that individual's size and shape and the conditions under which he was carrying, created a situation where there was an inadvertent discharge. Now, those things, we have to learn from those experiences and we have to move on. Fortunately, other than a little nick on his leg, there was no injury, no harm, no foul, but it can't go unnoticed because it's something that we need to know about so we can avoid those kinds of things happening in the future.
Yeah, I think and that particular situation is one of the areas that is a little different from what is often called an accidental discharge. That one really was accidental.
Right.
Most of the time, it's not really accidental. It's negligence. It's somebody did something that caused a problem. In this case, it was really an equipment failure. It wasn't equipment failure of the gun, but all the entire suite of equipment, it didn't go the way it was supposed to. And, you know, those kinds of things can happen. Nothing is perfect. As you said, we need to be aware that that can happen. And if your equipment is starting to get worn, in this case, the leather was starting to get soft and it allowed it to fold in a way that activated the trigger. Well, okay, you know, that things wear out. Once you buy a holster, it's not necessarily the last one you're going to buy for the rest of your life. You may need to pay attention to the condition of it. Check your equipment regularly. Make sure that everything is still up to snuff so that when you really need it, it'll be there and it's not going to cause a problem like this.
It's like any other piece of valuable equipment that you have in your life. If you, for your car, you check your oil, you check your brakes, you check your tires and things of that nature. You have to do the same thing with your firearm, your ammunition, your holster, and the various accessories that you have. Oh, which brings me to just one more issue I just wanted to mention that I saw in the United States Concealed Carry Association this last week when they're talking about safety. They were talking about, somebody called in asking about the safety of dry firing without snap caps. And the individual who was writing the article said, and as we all know, that most of the good guns, it's not an issue. There's not much of a problem with you firing or doing dry fire exercises without snap caps in your gun. However, the issue that comes up that's often overlooked is not whether you insert snap caps, but instead whether you take the safety precautions of checking, double-checking, and triple-checking that gun to ensure that it is absolutely loaded and you're in a safe environment where that can be done.
Maybe we should have it unloaded.
I'm sorry. Yes. double-check, and triple-check to make sure the gun is unloaded.
Yeah, make sure there's no headspace and timing problems either. And that's one of the advantages of using the snap caps is because it gives you a physical indication that the gun is in practice mode. You never want to go out with a gun in practice mode when you might need it for real, and you never want to practice with a gun that's already in real mode. Those are two things. The two loudest sounds a gun makes is bang when it's supposed to go click and click when it's supposed to go bang, and we don't want to do that. We're going to take a break right here, pay a few bills. We'll be back in just a few minutes. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro with Shooting from the Hip. Give us a call at 457-1290. We'll get you up on the board. 457-1290 here at AM 1290 and now 95.7 FM News Talk Radio, WHIO.
Hi, this is Rachel Parsons, spokesperson for the National Rifle Association, and you're on Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and 95.7 FM News Talk Radio, WHIO.
I want to welcome our listeners back to this broadcast of Shooting from the Hip. I'm Jeff Pedro and with Mark Avery. Couple of things I want to bring to the listeners' attention, points of interest, just to remind anybody that has been to the NRA site that the NRA annual meeting is being held this year in Pittsburgh, and it's going to be April 29th through May 1st. That's April 29th through May 1st, and people say, well, why would I want to go to the NRA meetings? I just want to let you know that that's an opportunity for you to see some of the new stuff that's out on the market. They have a variety of vendor booths that are available where they kind of showcase some of the new things that are either out, maybe were introduced at the SHOT Show and now are starting to show up in the manufacturer's warehouses, and also some of the things that are in test and evaluation that they're going to be coming up with later on. Also, it's a great time to rub elbows with other shooting enthusiasts like yourself, see what's going on. And, Mark, I know you've been to a couple of those meetings. You want to add a
bit? They are a toy store that is unbelievable. It is a variety that's way understated. You just can't imagine how many vendors there are and all the different kinds of products and the new things that are coming out. It's a great opportunity to get together with friends and family across the gun-owning family.
And the goodie bags that you usually walk away from are a lot of useful things. And I know this year they've had a number of pleas for people that are looking to volunteer. So if you have some time, you can donate a couple hours to help them in the store. You can help them on the their air rifle shooting range, a couple other opportunities.
Yeah, there's a lot of great places for NRA members to help out. Yeah. You do need to be a member, and you can join right there on the spot. Jeff, let's go out to the phones and take a call before we get to the bottom of the hour. Let's talk to Rich, who's got a question for us. Rich, welcome to the show.
How are you, sir? Real quick question on your the situation in Illinois. The way you described the ability for that guy to get past that law was that it was a reciprocity issue.
No, well, actually, it was that he had the gun stored in his vehicle, and they arrested him because he did not have an Illinois firearms owner ID card. And
well, in that situation, where did the federal right to carry through a state play or not play in that?
Well, there again, we don't know enough about the specific fact pattern of that case, and it didn't actually give the full reference to the case. And I'm sure it's available if you would go on to some of the legal websites. You could find that actual fact pattern. But again, I was just reporting that for the standpoint of letting people know, letting the listeners know that legislation that is evolving in even Illinois, which tends to be a more restrictive state, has a recent decision that seems to be gun favorable.
The main thing, though, about the national
federal carry.
Yeah, well, it's not federal carry. We don't have national reciprocity yet.
Well, no,
but it's a question of being able to transport.
Carry transit a state.
Exactly. And it doesn't, it's not really applicable as much in this particular case because that requires that a gun be in a very specific condition, locked, not accessible from inside the vehicle, and those sorts of things. So that was not the condition he was carrying it, but that's not what he was charged with as far as we can tell. And like Jeff said, we don't have a whole lot of information about the details of the case, so I don't want to speculate too much. But the key is that as with respect to transiting, you need to have the to comply with the federal safe harbor provisions. You have to have the gun unloaded and in a trunk or a compartment in the vehicle that cannot be accessed from within the vehicle, or if there is no such compartment, then it needs to be locked in a case.
Right. And that was not the situation in this Illinois thing.
That's my understanding, but we don't have, like I said, we don't have the full detail the way it was reported is what you described.
Gotcha. All right. Thank you, sir.
Hey, thanks very much for calling the show. We need to take a break at the bottom of the hour, and we will go out to Bill Scheidel in the News Center here in just a few seconds. So if you'd like to get on the show, give us a call at 457-1290. We still have some lines open, and we'll talk to Jens when we get back from the bottom of the hour. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and now 95.7 FM, News Talk Radio, WHIO.
God bless America. This is your blood brother, Ted Nugent, and you're listening to Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and 95.7 FM, News Talk Radio, WHIO.
I want to welcome our listeners back to the show. I want to encourage you, if you'd like to get on the air, you can give us a call at 457-1290. That's 457-1290. And just before the break, I'd talk to you about the upcoming NRA annual meetings. And I just want to remind our listeners, if you want more information about that event, you can go to www.nraam.org. That's nraam.org.
Yeah, for NRA annual meeting.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah, if you want to go out there, they've got a lot of information on the website. Another organization I just want to let you know about is the Ohio Rifle and Pistol Association. Great organization to join. It's the NRA Ohio affiliate organization. Each or many of the states have such entities, but it's an organization that supports the shooting sports. Their website is ORPA.net. They are commonly referred to as ORPA. It's a great organization. They promote the shooting sports in the state of Ohio, which not only by their own accounts, but by lots of accounts, Ohio is one of the largest states promoting the shooting sports. And this is one of the organizations that is instrumental in continuing that cause. Individual membership is only $25 a year, so I'm going to encourage our listeners to go out to their website at ORPA.net and take a look at what they have to offer, and if you're so inclined to get involved. They're also running their annual fundraising raffle that's going to be going on for the next several months, and first prize is a Springfield Armory Mil-Spec 1911 commemorating the 100-year anniversary of the 1911 pistol. Second prize is an M1 Garand rifle from the CMP, and also third prize is a 10/22 rifle, which is, I believe, is also customized. So they got some nice prizes, and if you're interested in getting involved in their annual fundraiser, do so. Again, that's ORPA.net. Mark, let's go out right out to the phones, and let's talk to Jens in Columbus.
Jens, welcome to the show.
How are you doing today?
We're doing great. How can we help you?
The question is, my wife and I would love to have our CCW, but my question is, what is the right age for your child to learn the fundamentals of a handgun through your first shot, which my wife and I did, or through a children's program if you have any?
Well, there's two options there. I think the first option is the education you give them about safety around the home, and that's going to start at as early an age as you think they can reasonably understand what's going on. That's
correct.
The first level. It's going to be your education of the children. There's a couple of programs offered by the NRA, and they were both mentioned in the First Shots program. Actually, the First Shots program in and of itself is a National Shooting Sports Foundation-based program, but then they also have the Eddie Eagle Firearm Safety Program, which typically is offered by schools and other organizations, which is a great animated way for the kid to get involved in the shooting, understanding the rules, the safety issues, and that sort of thing. So seeking that type of training out above and beyond what you do, I think, is a great option. But as far as how young, I think the issue comes down to when you think they can reasonably understand the basics, and then you're going to phase it in. You're going to start it out maybe with, if they're so inclined to get a BB gun and you have a place where they're going to be able to go out and shoot an air gun. You might talk to them about that and the safety issues relevant to that. It could start even before that when you first get them their first pop gun, maybe when they're 2, 3, 4 years old, when those sorts of things come into play. And you can start the firearm safety at an early age when you think they're young enough, but don't overdo it. I want to encourage you not to front load too much information up front.
There's a great resource available called The Cornered Cat. It's a website that is created by Kathy Jackson, who is currently also the managing editor of Concealed Carry Magazine, the journal of the United States Concealed Carry Association. Kathy's website has some excellent information. She's writing it from the perspective of a mother and a woman who's also a firearms trainer and very fascinated and interested in making sure everything is done safely. She has some excellent resources for parents about what do I do to introduce kids to guns? When should I do that? How do I go about doing that? What should I do for that first introduction to a real handgun? And when should I do that? And she has some excellent information. She's raised 5 boys. They're all still alive. The guns actually arrived before all the boys did. So she really does have some very good practical information about that. It's at corneredcat.com is her website.
Okay.
And we'll have a link to it. In fact, there's already a link to it on our radio page, but I'll put a new one in for the show notes for this week.
All right, thank you. And also, I could say you need to try to get another hour, 2 hours on your program. Because you have so much information to give to everybody, and 2 hours is really not enough.
Well, we feel the same way, and we're constantly talking to the producers here about that possibility, and someday we think we'll make it happen. But we're working in that direction, and we appreciate you listening.
So keep those cards and letters coming at radio@sim-trainer.com. Thanks very much, Jens, for being part of the show.
Thank you very much. Have a good day.
Thanks very much. Let's go out and talk to Tim in Yellow Springs, who has a question for us. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks. I have a question about console carrying your vehicle under the current law.
Okay.
My .38 Special fits inside the console. It doesn't lock. The console doesn't lock. It's up on the dashboard. But it fits in there nicely with the holster. So I'm legal there.
Your console, wait a second. Let me clarify your question a little bit. You say your console is on the dashboard?
It is.
So is it maybe a glove box, that kind?
It looks like a glove box.
Okay.
It acts like one, but it does. But it's a console.
All right.
The glove box is on the far right, and it doesn't lock either.
Okay. Well, there's no requirement now that it lock. So either the console or the glove box is an acceptable place to carry a firearm. It's one of the 4 legal ways, and it does not need to lock. Okay.
My .38 Special fits in there with the holster, but the 9mm won't fit in there in its holster. And so when I carry the 9, I put the 9 in there all by itself without the holster.
Okay.
Is that still legal?
Sure. Is it secure? I mean, it's not gonna flop around or it's gonna slide around.
No, because the console will close.
Sure. Okay, that's the only requirement, that the console has to close, and it needs to be secure. I mean, it should not be loose and flopping around, but as long as the console can close, you can legally carry a loaded firearm there as long as you have a license to carry a concealed handgun.
Without the holster.
That's correct. There's no requirement for a holster. The only requirement for a holster is when you're carrying it on your person, it must be in a holster.
Thank you.
Okay, great. Thanks very much for calling the show.
Thanks for your show.
Appreciate it. Let's talk to Tony in Sugar Creek, who has a question. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Jeff. This is Tony. Hey, I'm going to be at your class tonight for Handgun 1, but I had a question. I noticed that last fall the ATF came out with a new report talking about maybe getting rid of some of these semi-automatic shotguns. I wanted to get a Sega 12. Noticed that about 3 months ago they were about $500 to $700, and now you can't find them unless they're on like some of the auctions, and they're $1,400, $1,500. Just wondering what you suggest if we can't find one of those as far as a replacement.
Well, I think any of the brands. Beretta just came out with a new line at the SHOT Show. They have two different models, and I can't remember the models off the top of my head, but I think any of the good quality firearm manufacturers that have the semi-autos, I think in the case of the Sega, it's not so much the ATF's requirements or specifications or proposed specifications as much as it is just the demand for that gun. It's simply an issue of supply and demand there, and depending on the various models, the prices are going to range anywhere from $500 to $2,500. And I just think you need to look. Mossberg also just came out with a new line at the SHOT Show, and they have one particular model that is a very low-end cost, but I understand it's getting rave reviews, very good quality, and I'll try to make it a point to look that up and mention that on the next show next week. But any of the reputable manufacturers that have good quality semi-autos is going to be one way to go. As for the issue concerning the ATF, these days they're trying to come up with all sorts of restrictions, and they're unreasonable restrictions, and we just have to continue to be alert to those. But I'm not aware of anything in particular that's going to limit access to semi-automatic shotguns at the present time.
Sounds good. Thanks a lot. We'll see you tonight.
Okay, see you
Thanks
there.
Thanks very much for calling the show.
You know, Mark, one of the callers earlier talked about getting youth involved in shooting sports, and I just want to give you this opportunity to talk a little bit about a young lady we hope to have on next week that's going to come on board and share an interesting story and I'm going to say a quest that I think we're going to be very supportive in backing.
Absolutely. Alyssa Campbell is the Ohio delegate to the NRA's Youth Education Summit. This is an annual event that is hosted by the NRA Foundation, and we hope to have her on the show next week to talk a little bit about what the Youth Education Summit is all about, what the program is, and how it reaches out to young people to get them interested in our fundamentals, what it is that brought us the Second Amendment in the first place, what does the Second Amendment mean, why is it important for citizens to have the right to keep and bear arms. And so we are really looking forward to having her on the show next week. She contacted us a couple of weeks ago, and I was out of town all last week, so we weren't able to get as connected as I'd like to have. But we'll meet with her sometime during this week, and then we'll plan to have her in the studio next week if she can be here. So I think that'll be something that people should look forward to. If you've got some young folks, teenagers, even a lot younger than that, who are interested in the shooting sports, interested in freedom and liberty and what the Second Amendment and the Constitution has to say about that, be sure to have them tune in next week at 2 o'clock for Shooting from the Hip, because I think this is going to be an excellent program, one that you're going to want to save on your MP3 player.
Yeah, it's just another example. You know, at Sim Trainer, that's one of the things we promote, the shooting sports at all ages. Our award-winning First Shots program is typically the first class that most people were exposed to. They have a very positive experience there, and then they move on to additional training. The last caller mentioned he's going to be at our training tonight. Most of the people that end up in our advanced handgun series started at either basic handgun or even before that at either private lessons or the First Shots program, and then they progress through and they become very competent through their structured training that we offer. And again, it's not age restrictive. We've had I remember years ago we talked about Adrian, one of our 14-year-old shooters who started out at 12 years old, and by the time he was 14, he not only competed but he won the Illinois National Shooting Competition, not the kids division but the adult division. Yeah. So he did a great job.
He really picked it up, and it became just an absolute passion for him. We had a caller who had a question that let's just answer real quick before we go to the break. He had a question on what's happening in the Senate with the restaurant carry And there has been some movement on, there will be the third hearing for Senate Bill 17 that will carry in restaurants. So that will allow people who have a license to carry concealed handgun to carry in restaurants and reduce some of the other problems with carrying in a car. So there's a hearing on that scheduled for next week. And there will also be a third hearing on the Restoration of Rights Bill next week, Senate Bill 61. So we're moving along in those things, even though the House and the Senate have been really busy. Let's take our last break for the hour. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and now 95.7 FM, News Talk Radio, WHIO.
Hi, this is Cam Edwards from NRANews.com, and you're listening to Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and 95.7 FM, News Talk Radio, WHIO.
I want to welcome our listeners back to the show. I'm Jeff Pedro in with Mark Avery. I want to remind our listeners that we have a CCW class that's beginning Monday. It'll be Monday evening through Thursday evening, 5:30 to 9:30. We have several slots available in that particular class. That'll be the state-required course to get your concealed holder's license. Again, it'll go 5:30 to 9:30 Monday through Thursday evening, four nights. You just need to show up on Monday night. We have several slots available. If you want to get involved or get enrolled in that class, you can call the range at 293-3914, and they can get you in either today or tomorrow. You could also send us a note at on the website at www.sim-trainer.com, and we can see if we can get you involved if you're so inclined.
Be sure to let us know you heard about it on Shooting from the Hip.
Absolutely. Also, Mark, on the break, an individual called in and mentioned the 4-H is another good organization to get affiliated with if you want to get involved in the shooting sports.
Getting kids involved with shooting sports?
Absolutely. Both the 4-H and the Boy Scouts. As a matter of fact, we have just recently started to give some thought to try and incorporate some of that into some of the programming we have at Sim Trainer with some people who have brought the idea to our attention, and we'll see if we can make that happen, because that's just another angle, another group of people that would benefit from exposure to the shooting sports.
We've got one call on the phone, so let's go out to George in Beaver Creek, who has a question for us. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, guys. Just a question. Being a business owner, say in an office environment, if you've got the decal or the sign on the door posting no handguns, can a business owner, even with that sign posted on the front of the building or on the door, still allow employees permission to carry a handgun within that building?
Yes. Is it your building, or did somebody else post that sign?
No, it's my building.
Okay. So, you can certainly post the sign, which creates a general prohibition, and then grant permission to anyone that you choose. There's been some discussion about that, and not everybody who's a backseat legal analyst necessarily agrees with that, but that is precisely what we teach in our class.
George, let me just ask you, if you'd share with us and the listening audience, what is your reasoning for differentiating between your employees and law-abiding citizens? Why would you allow one group but not others?
It is more of an issue that the sign was already on the building when we occupied it, and you know, my dilemma is whether to remove the sign altogether to keep perhaps strangers from coming in that are unfamiliar. It's not a business that's generally open to the public.
Right.
So it's an issue of whether or not to remove the sign or leave the sign up to prohibit maybe strangers that are unfamiliar to us from coming in with a handgun.
Well, if they have a license to carry a concealed handgun, then they have passed a background check, and although they may not be known to you, they certainly have had plenty of background information that is known about them to the state, and that they've cleared a background check. So those aren't the people that you should be concerned about, and the people who would carry a gun to do evil things aren't going to pay attention to your sign anyway.
That makes sense.
Yeah, George, that's the issue I'd like to leave you with, is that when you're contemplating whether or not to do it, just remember the fact that the bad guy isn't going to pay attention whether or not you have the sign up there, so don't get too wrapped up about that.
George, thanks very much for calling the show. We are out of time for the hour. So once again, I want to remind you to be sure to tune in next week when we'll have Alyssa joining us, Alyssa Campbell joining us to talk about the NRA Youth Education Summit. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro. Stay tuned for There Is a Season. Right after the news, on AM 1290 and now 95.7 FM News Talk Radio, WHIO.